Mini episode 1812 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode 1812. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. And going back to when we did our pre-election special, 1776, it just happened to land there. You know, if you're thinking that we're going to take these historical markers here, and the fact that I have on somebody of Canadian heritage, that we're going to discuss U.S.-Canadian relations for mini episode 1812, that's not the case. It's a coincidence that I have on a gentleman with some Canadian heritage. But we are here to discuss NBA, as we almost always are when it's been. Specifically the NBA stretch run that's upcoming and sort of digesting everything that has just happened with All-Star Weekend and the trade deadline. So with that speaking, it's FDH Lounge dignitary and FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Rick. How are you?
Doing great, buddy. Always great to have you on. Always great to talk about these things. And I know that you were certainly looking at everything NBA All-Star Weekend a lot closer than I was. A lot of distractions on my end between the Four Nations face-off. Daytona runs into the All-Star game last night. It'll be interesting to see the effect on ratings if those have come out yet. But what were some of the key markers that you were looking at through the weekend? The very last one that Turner is ever going to carry.
Right. And I think one of the biggest thing that's come from this entire All-Star Weekend is they're going to have to NBC's going to have to find a way to cut down on commercials and promo time, because that was one of the biggest questions from the weekend. Obviously, the championship game between Team Shaq and Team Charles essentially had a 20-minute stoppage of play halfway through to honor inside the NBA crew, which was well-deserved. But the issue, as you can understand, is that a lot of the momentum in that game just completely dissipated afterwards. So it's going to be really interesting to see. There's a lot of talk rehashing again of Team World versus Team USA. So that's going to be really part of it as well. I think one of the big questions is also going to be is that in the old timeline, Rick, we've had from like the early 2000s, like the lead up to All-Star Weekend, like the Celebrity Game, the Rising Stars Challenge and Saturday Night were usually like the precursor to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it feels almost like they are the main course towards the actual game, which is kind of a weird thing to say. And overall, I'll say too that I don't think the mini game format was a bad idea. There was definitely some instances during the games where they was very interesting and very competitive, considering we've seen, you know, a team score 211 points in a single game and a lackadaisical, daisical effort on defense in most circumstances. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the NBA really decides to do at this time, which it's kind of hard because we now exist in a world, Rick, where it's like every sort of all-star spectacle, because we know it's the same thing in the NFL too, where we have to stretch as much airtime as possible, get as many commercials in for the advertisers. But again, the question then becomes that when is it too much? And what happens when you start to have people tune out over time? Because I feel like there has been criticism of the league in recent months of the game and the pace of play not being that interesting, and putting together an all-star game that kind of was more an 80% promo for the NBA and Kevin Hart was probably, you know, not what they had wanted to do initially.
Right. And I would say that the way that it went, this is one of these things where you can call this unscientific if you want to, but as I was flipping back and forth between Daytona and just seeing if the game or games, as it were, plural, was one of them going on, like, maybe one out of five times when I flipped over, it wasn't in commercial and it wasn't Kevin Hart and the NBA inside the NBA guys standing around on the court talking.
I believe there was a study at least done by someone on Reddit that there was maybe 20% of the total All-Star game experience was actual game time, actual gameplay. And I do think that has to be taken into consideration, because if you keep evolving the product into this is about ads, it's not going to be as interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the issue too is that, and I think we all love All-Star Weekend on some level, but we're starting to see the degradation of that mattering and caring for players. And then now fans, I would make the argument, are now getting there too. And we're going to see what those ratings were and if there's going to be any sort of like shift away towards maybe cutting it down in terms of the game time, in terms of like the products, because overall it was a very interesting lead up to the All-Star game. And it felt like, for not necessarily me, but a lot of other NBA fans were like, this is not what we came to see, essentially.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing too. I mean, I've never been a fan of getting cute with the format and doing it by drafted teams and everything like that. Because, you know, if you're going to do USA versus the world, I mean, I guess that makes more sense than what the NHL's doing, because they couldn't do what the NHL's doing, because the NHL has a distribution of talent among several countries that the NBA still can't match. If you ended up doing it, you know, a series of USA versus France versus Canada, I mean, we just saw that in the Olympics. We know what that looks like. If you put it together, USA versus world, I don't know. I mean, I'm one of these people where it's like, hey, I got a radical concept for you. How about East versus West? You think we could try that in 2026? But, you know, I guess.
I think also too, Rick, the big issue too is that it's going to be the split of how we determine All-Stars, because currently in the NBA, we have 70% of the players are American. So even though we have a huge amount of stars that are from the world, you're going to see, and I guarantee you, the first thing that's going to happen is if there's not an even balance of star power, like in the world, like I have a feeling it won't be anything egregious. But remember, there was a timeline where the fans attempted to vote Zaza Pachulia into the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Where we may see a guy like, you know, like Bilal Coulibaly for Washington, who's a great young player, get in because Team World has a lower player pool than everybody else. So it's going to be really interesting for them to determine it. But it's weird. It's almost like the game seems to be the issue now. Like literally like years ago, like the biggest question was the slam dunk contest and all the stuff for the Rising Stars Challenge. Like, why do we need all these events? And it feels to me now like those other events may be more interesting than the actual game at periods of time.
Yeah. And if you were going to divide it into multiple teams, the only way really to do it, and I've talked about this on and off for years, and to where you could basically do a little bit of a barnstorming thing sort of during the All-Star break, similar to what the NHL's doing, although the NBA would never do that because they want to have everybody on site and the whole convention party atmosphere of it. But if you did it, and there's not a good framework for this in terms of like Big 12 alums, ACC alums, how many of these guys actually graduate, right? But guys who came from the Big 12, guys who came from the ACC, from the Big 10, from the SEC, guys who played in mid-majors, guys who played internationally. There's six teams right there. Yeah,
one discussion point, and this is going to probably get brought up, it could be by division.
Where you're
just taking the best players from each division.
Although, you know, I will say this, though. As a guy who every year in our Pro Hoops Draftology and Fantasy Hoops Draftology here, our two guides at the time of the NBA draft and fantasy basketball season here, making out divisional all-star teams for the year before, first and second team, it gets very thin when you get to the Southeast. Yeah. The Southeast, brother, that's always a tough one to fill out.
And I mean, the question too is that I'm not against the mini game format because it does bring some competition, but and you can just tell if you watch the championship game of the All-Star game. Like, you could tell midway in the second half, the second half of that game, players were just doing the same All-Star stuff. They were dribbling around, taking deep threes, and just doing, you know. And again, I don't really think there's a way you can fix this per se, but what you're going to have to figure out too is that do we really need this anymore? Like, do we need a Oscar game? It's a valid question. I mean, that's what the NFL did in moving it to the Pro Bowl games. You could really, if you wanted to, and we've discussed this, I think, on subsequent, like, not subsequent, but prior podcasts or episodes, like, you really could make, you know, the Rising Stars Challenge and, you know, the Celebrity Game be the Saturday event, and then All-Star Sunday night is essentially the dunk contest, the three-point contest, and whatever mini event you want at that point, whether it's a one-on-one tournament or whatever you think. So there is a way to not do it, but the thing, too, and we've seen this, too, and it, again, we know the NFL ratings-wise is usually bulletproof, but we've seen the degradation of Pro Bowl viewership go from when it was treated more like a game of being, you know, getting 10 to 20 million people watching.
Yeah.
To now where it's barely scraping by, you know, numbers that, you know, 4 or 5 million people. So, again, it's a question. I mean, Kevin Durant even came out and said, look, do we even need to have an All-Star weekend anymore? What's the point? Like, we could still, you know, name All-Stars. We can still do these things now. Alibi it. No league is going to turn down free money, so I don't think that'll ever happen.
Right.
But the question I do think is, like, is there a reason to maybe pare the events down, cut the game out, maybe make it more simple, or, you know. Because honestly, too, I think if you really wanted to do that, you still can have all these events, and you can still play a celebrity game, and you can play, you know, other things to fill the hole if you need the money or ad revenue dollars. But there's no perfect way at this point, to be honest. So
no. And every time I was flipping over and seeing the lack of defense, I mean, that's what carried over from when there was 200 points being scored in a conventional All-Star game. And just looking at it, it was like they have somehow managed to take this thing and do even less with it, make it into the old school version of the MTV Rock and Jock competition, except it's with NBA players. Was anybody dying to see that? Was anybody dying to be like, you know what I want to see is I want to see guys go out there and give it all the intensity of like Dan Cortez. I wasn't dying to see that, Ben.
No, I hate to say it, Rick. The NBA All-Star Celebrity Game was more interesting than the actual All-Star Game.
Probably. So. I'll have to take your word for it because I was glued to USA Canada.
Yeah.
Which, again, if you want to talk the exact opposite end of the spectrum for competitive juice and everything like that, it would be the Four Nations face-off. So
yeah, and the thing, too, is that that's has to be something that's discussed at some point. The problem is, and I feel like we see this a lot more in the NBA than it is in the NHL, that there is, like, a very specific, like, group of nations that play hockey.
Yeah.
In the NBA, you just have a lot of athletes from a lot of different places. And what ends up happening is that, sure, we can say world versus USA or even break it down to like France and Germany, but we always have all these other events usually.
Right.
During the year, whether it's FIBA, whether it's the Olympics, and the NHL at this time, simply, it's just mainly the Olympics and a lot of some of the smaller, you know, men junior tournaments and all these other things. But at the end of the day, you only see it once in the Olympics. That's why Four Nations was so successful this year, because you put stakes on something. And again, the league's going to have to consider this, because after a while, I think the ratings degradation is just going to continue. So you really are going to have to make something up almost to bring fans back. Now, Alibi, I don't think this is a priority for the league right now, but it's got to have to be discussed at some point.
Yeah, they got to figure out what the way forward is. And again, you know, NBC is going to have a vested interest in this as well in terms of them taking it over and wanting to see it be, you know, more than it is and better than it was. So, yeah, I mean, there are no easy answers necessarily to the direction that this is going in. But it has been something where, it just there wasn't a whole lot that was memorable outside of some of the things from the skills competition and obviously the dunk competition and a few things like that. But, I mean, how many takeaways on court were there for the whole weekend aside from a couple of the, you know, freak show aspects?
Right. And I think one of the big things, too, is that it's really interesting that, of all people, Mac McClung, who's currently the G League MVP, is on Orlando's roster, is the biggest story from this thing. It's negative publicity, and then it's Mac McClung doing a reverse over a car.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two biggest things. And then, you know, If you watch the All-Star Celebrity Game, Rome Flynn had one MVP. Like, if you had to list, like, of the most notable things that happened during All-Star Weekend, mm-hmm. the big one is people complaining about the All-Star Game mm-hmm. and then everything else after that. And usually for a league, that's not what you want. And we're seeing this in the NFL, too. Like, mm-hmm. And again, we also saw this in Major League Baseball during that run of where the game didn't matter as much for the All-Star, where All-Star right. game was essentially went from, you know, home field advantage in the World Series to now, which is there's no stakes. So the ratings right. start to devolve from there. So mm-hmm. again, this is not just an NBA problem, but this is just a overall problem. Because we all, like before, the reason why ratings were so up before was it was a competitive aspect for players, but it was also too, we had less choice. So when you have less choice, like why would anyone actively choose to watch an NBA All-Star game?
Yeah.
That's somewhat competitive during the day. And I don't think once the cat's out of the bag, you can't throw the cat back in the bag at that point. So
yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, so there's a lot to kind of sift out of that as far as what happens when they're on the new TV deal next year. And again, what does NBC want to make out of it? Because I think there were a lot of very cautionary aspects of this one here that they're probably not going to be looking to replicate. So that's something that probably gets answered in concert between the NBA and the broadcast partner here. Prior to that, as we had discussed on the show previously when we did our emergency pod, the day of the Luka deal coming out, again, a wild trading deadline to really kind of set the tone for this stretch run of the season that we're talking about here today. At the end of the day, there are a few more teams that are potentially in a conversation if everything goes right for them. But again, look at Dallas themselves. I mean, with Luka, they made that big run last year coming out of the middle of the pack in the West. That's what the Lakers would clearly like to replicate, acquiring Luka here. But again, the deal for Mark Williams and replacing the presence down low, that one goes through, although I think there's still talk about Mark Williams possibly being a buyout candidate. But so you've got that. You've got teams that are basically looking to join sort of the periphery of the mix. In terms of the major contenders here, Oklahoma City, essentially the trade that they made, you know, I put that in air quotes here, was getting Chet Holmgren back. When you're getting an all-star level player back in your lineup, that's basically all you need to do. Boston, I didn't really feel the need to do much here, and they're in kind of a weird cap situation anyways. The Cavs, looking at what's been the longstanding question by a lot of people, it's not a question that I had as much, but a lot of people had about what do you do with the wing. They go get a true wing in DeAndre Hunter. So you've got the teams that are sort of the most clear-cut contenders in the league that made deals. You've got other teams like Golden State going and picking up Jimmy Butler that are trying to work their way into the periphery of the conversation and do what Dallas did a year ago.
Right, and I think the biggest thing that I've noted in prior episodes leading up to this was the Western Conference kind of felt a little boring this year. And now we're getting a lot more interesting because LeBron and Luka will play together. They'll make some noise in the Western Conference playoffs. Butler with Golden State, even though they're still hovering at 500 at this time of this mm-hmm. episode, they have the opportunity to make a jump up too. And, you know, there's still Memphis is hanging around. Houston is in a little bit of a slide right now, but they're playing well, and they'll probably get Fred VanVleet back at some point. And then there's still, you know, Dallas. You can't count them out just yet. I know they're really injured right now, but if they can kind of get themselves slotted in that 6-8 spot and face one of these younger teams earlier on, they have an opportunity to make a deep run. And the East is still pretty much, I think, the Eastern Conference. Like, the Cavs got a lot stronger with Hunter's acquisition. And you're going to see, you know, Boston couldn't really do that much. The Knicks really didn't have much cap room either to work with. And then on top of that, too, the Pacer, the biggest deal of the Eastern Conference was Kyle Kuzma going to Milwaukee. And that right now has been looking like a very solid deal, sadly, because Chris Middleton has just had dealt with so many injuries that anything was an upgrade over the current version of Chris Middleton at this time.
That being said, I mean, anytime Kyle Kuzma's the answer, if you're a contender, I don't think you're asking the right question. So, you know, yeah, it might have been a situation, and I do a lot of times have sympathy for GMs that are kind of locked into a thing and got to do whatever they can, and it might have been one of those type of situations. But when you're talking about Dallas and the younger teams in the Western Conference here, Do we want to say, as crazy as this is, do we want to say after the De'Aaron Fox deal to San Antonio that it is absolutely out of the question that if they draw the right opponent in the first round, that they may make it to the second round? Are we talking about San Antonio possibly already in the West semifinals?
I mean, again, it depends on the situation, and it also depends on what San Antonio wants to do, because they also have to realize that this may be their last great draft pick potential at this
point. Oh, it will be. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so they're, again, like they'll have options and they have a lot of picks owed to them moving forward. But again, their questions from San Antonio fans has been brought up to their head coach, Mitch Johnson, has had some very, very interesting rotations over the last couple of games. And there's discussion within that fan base that maybe they're doing a stealth tank. They're trying to lose some more games and then really bulk up for the Wemby run of moving forward and getting these good draft picks now. Because what we tend to see in the history of the league is overall, these teams get built. And what ends up happening is that they lose draft capital over time because they keep improving.
Right.
So it wouldn't be against the worst scenario if you aren't guaranteed to get it to the conference finals, why wouldn't you attempt to get a better draft pick or put yourself in a position? Because who knows? Like, if you get some lottery luck, you could get Cooper Flagg and you could get into a dynastic run if you have that much talent. And they've done a really good job of not trading away any assets, especially in the De'Aaron Fox deal, which they essentially gave away nothing of real note outside of some draft picks and Zach Collins. Like, there wasn't really, they didn't give up any major pieces. They didn't give up Keldon Johnson, Vassell, or Stephon Castle even to get Fox. So they still have a lot of movement. And again, to go to Dallas real quick, is that they'll get healthy over time. And it looks like that their bench is right now really showing its strength. They have dropped a couple of games recently, but they're staying very, very competitive without Anthony Davis. So I wouldn't throw the towel out on Dallas just yet. It's just their road's going to be a lot harder to climb at the end of the day.
It's going to be, yeah. I mean, you know, this deal never stunk nearly as worse in the near term and the medium term. It's the long term where we're just going to look at this and point and laugh. But yeah, I mean, in the near term, it might be relatively competitive between Dallas and the Lakers, depending on the health here. But then Anthony Davis goes street clothes again. You don't know how long he's going to be down. So that's going to be an interesting thing here. And I do know that from listening to the friend of our show podcast, The Dumb Zone, they're starting to speculate actively about, what about Kyrie in the offseason? I mean, the minimum you're going to have to do is give him a contract that's a lot more than you want to give him at this stage of his career. So that's just one more thing on top of this. And that's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is he does what he's done in other situations and flakes out. And then that's real disaster.
Right. And then again, one other major consideration at this timeline, too, is that there can always be grumblings around Kyrie. And, you know, the Lakers already have, you know, there was that little blip before the All-Star game where he changed his Twitter bio or his X bio to all Lakers colors. So could we potentially rule out him going to the Lakers at some point? Maybe creating some weird three-headed point guard monster out there. So again, I don't think it's likely, but again, at this point, anything is possible for a lot of these teams. And I think that's why this league is so interesting at the current timeline, because before, like we saw this too, especially in the NFL with the Kansas City dynasty, people tend to get bored with dynastic runs. And right now the league, I would argue, has about 6 to 7 teams who could convincingly win a title this year. And I only think that number is going to continue to go up. So
I think
the league is full of parity at the moment, but I feel like there's an opportunity to see a couple of these teams really build up and build consecutive titles. But the league, at least in terms of health, is healthier than it's ever been at this period of time in terms of overall talent dispersed to all these teams. And that's even before expansion is going to get talked about again.
Yeah. And I have to say, too, I mean, how hilarious that would be if it's one more Lakers and Mavericks deal here. If they have to do a sign and trade of Kyrie to the Lakers, that would be just, you know, chef's kiss if it came down to that. But that was the thing where, and there was a retweet over the weekend that I sent to you that Dan McDowell from the aforementioned Dumb Zone taking note of. There was a video clip with Jeannie Buss being interviewed about the trade and her husband, Jay Moore, standing right next to her. And Dan notes in the retweet how hard Jay Moore is having to keep a straight face when she's talking about how much they had to give up to get Luka. I mean, that's, you know, props to Jay Moore because I couldn't have done it. I would have just been like, oh, good job, babe. Nice try.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just something that we mentioned on that like that Luka trade deadline podcast. Essentially, too, yeah, was the Lakers are relevant again because they, in all honesty, I don't think anyone thought of them as a serious threat in the Western Conference.
True.
As currently when composed of just LeBron and Anthony Davis. But now, again, if Luka and LeBron can share the floor together, space the floor, and they can get enough from the other members of that team, they have a legitimate opportunity because if you have two guys of that potential and that ability on the floor at different stretches, it's just going to wear a lot of teams out. But ultimately, the big question for them is going to be is their matchups early on in their playoff run.
Right.
There are some very favorable ones and some ones that are not favorable at all. So we're going to see how the Lakers do, but they're building for – it's weird to say the short term and the future because it's not often you can make a trade in today's NBA where that happens.
Oh, they definitely are. And in looking at this, the team that's been their kryptonite in the playoffs the last two seasons, Denver, this is not a team that for most of the season we were talking about is necessarily a frontline imminent threat, but they've really been looking better recently. And key to that has been that Jamal Murray looks more like, you know, the Jamal Murray that we're used to seeing. And that's one of those things where, again, you know, how he holds up physically might be the biggest X factor for that team because they're thinner than they were when they were champions 2 years ago. They're still looking to replenish some of the depth that they had to let go because of the looming second apron. But Denver's a team where, again, I mean, you're already getting, I mean, seemingly every year now, you're getting the best version of Jokic because this is a guy who, I mean, his physical decline is going to be slow at best because it was never, his game was never predicated on athleticism. And every year he's getting smarter and smarter and smarter. So it's like he's going to keep getting better on a growth curve that most guys don't generally go on. This is probably the best Jokic we've seen. And if you're getting a Murray that's, you know, close to being the top level version of Murray, well, I mean, that right there reminds you a lot of 2023.
Right. And on top of that, too, they're one of their major issues last year was their bench. And it is much improved this year.
Payne Watson
and Julian Strother are both taking steps forward.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a Russell Westbrook that seems more like the Russell Westbrook that could help win you a title.
Yes.
So that's also part of it, too. And I also feel like, too, what ends up happening, and we make a lot of early judgments early in the season, and we tend to forget that, especially as currently composed, when you're adding a player like Russell Westbrook to a team, it's going to take time. It's not going to be an automatic, you know, simple fit scenario. So but they're definitely a team that can still create a lot of noise. The real question for them is going to be is, if they face one of these deeper teams like an OKC or a Houston or even a Memphis too, how are they going to react? Because if they don't get their big numbers from their back rotation guys like Westbrook and Watson and Strother and Christian Braun, then it's not going to be enough for them to win a title.
That's true. Yeah. And so it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how they work through that. You can probably really trust Mike Malone to get the best possible version out of that, as he has shown previously. So when we're talking about teams that won the title a couple of years ago, they're trying to reach their way back, a team that is further away than Denver and remains so even after the trading deadline, but Golden State. And it was funny with the comments from Draymond Green over the All-Star break, because when you talk about the modern NBA, you know, it reminds you of, you know, the Eric Andre meme of like, why would so-and-so shoot him? You know, I mean, a guy from Golden State is talking about the state of the modern game, you know, which they basically single-handedly created. But you put Jimmy Butler in the mix now, and I've seen some speculation that, like, well, the fact that he's, you know, not nearly as much of a shooter, paradoxically, it's a good thing because him and Steph, they're not going to overlap each other in that sense. They're not both going to be parked out at the three-point line. So I guess that's true. But as far as where they sit after that, I mean, They're a team that, again, I think they're a little bit closer to the periphery than they were. I'm not sure they were even on the periphery before they made the deal, because they went through what they thought, and I think this is hubris, especially looking back on it, this whole thing of like, we're going to transition on the fly. All these great draft picks are going to be the next Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And where did that get them? They ended up having to go get a 35-year-old Jimmy Butler here at the deadline. But in the short term, which is all that they're really looking for, Golden State seems to live from short term to short term for the rest of Steph's career. In the short term, it does seem to have put them in position where if they get the right draw, they probably could make some noise in April and May.
Right. And it's kind of interesting to see that the Warriors' real strength was keeping that core together. And then eventually what ends up happening to them is that the core got old. And a lot of their draft picks pretty much flamed out at this point. Like, the only one that's even really shown any sort of real potential would be Pozetsky at this point, or however we pronounce
it. Yeah, well,
name these days.
Kuminga, but, Kuminga maybe somewhat.
Weird to say, too, Rick, that the most talented young player they have on the roster is Trayce Jackson-Davis.
Yeah.
And he was essentially an afterthought on that.
Yeah.
So, it's good. I would say that Golden State can get interesting, especially if Butler can turn into playoff Jimmy, because we've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the rest of their back half of that rotation continues to play well and make some plays, and Buddy Hield, you know, is still a great shooter, and they still got enough guys on, you know, the periphery that they will stay competitive. It's just they don't really look like a favorite at this period of time in the Western Conference. And the problem is that we've seen this with teams every, you know, iteration in the NBA, in the NFL, and in, you know, I would say the NHL as well, where you're getting to the tail run of the dynasty,
mm-hmm.
and guys start to age out. And when you try to bring in the new guys to fill in the role, that just doesn't work out. And what ends up happening is that the ownership group then has to make the decision of whether we have to keep competing and making sure everything stays okay, and at least stay within that sort of Mendoza line of, hey, we're still making the playoffs, we're going to get there, but not make any deep runs, or you're just going to blow it up. And what we've seen a lot from a lot of these teams moving forward in all sports is that ownership tends to be late to the party in terms of trying to figure out when to move on.
Portland. But that's, I will say though, in the NBA, that's less ruinous, because the thing that I continue to bemoan as a hockey fan is my Detroit Red Wings. That whole thing in the 2010s and Ken Holland, and like, we're gonna stretch the record. We're gonna get it to 25 years in a row and beyond of just making the playoffs. Great. Get in the first round, get humiliated, go home. And then basically by the time you're in a rebuild, it's a horrible rebuild. The thing with the NBA, with the rosters being so much smaller and the number of difference-making players being exponentially smaller, is that you can get to the point of suckitude almost in a heartbeat if you want to. For the Red Wings, it was a thing where even when they were in the teardown, it took a while to tear down just because they had so many respectable pieces on the roster. At least in the NBA, you can do it quicker if you want to.
Right, and I feel like Golden State, again, had the opportunity to extend their run, but they ended up just taking guys who were either the best fit at the time or they weren't necessarily pushing forward in terms of becoming a thing. Because let's see how many – if you look down the list of those draft picks, there were a lot of guys they passed on that probably could have helped them put them in serious contention. Now, I'm not saying LaMelo Ball would have been the fix of all the fixes, but it's a lot different when you're taking high draft picks and they're not staying on their roster or getting any meaningful time. Like, Pozetsky is literally the most notable draft pick they've had recently that is getting time on that active rotation. And again, I think he's a great player, but is that, you know, is an older Jimmy Butler, an older Steph Curry, an older Draymond Green enough to make a run to the NBA Finals? I just cannot. Without any logic, you never want to say it's done, but just considering how high the level of competition in the West is right now, I just do not see Golden State getting past the second round at this point.
Well, and the thing is too, and you can make you can make too much out of like feelings and vibes. Guys like me and you have that for as much as we watch the game. And it's easy to get too kind of sucked into that. But as I talked about when we did our emergency pod for the Luka thing, this thing of like Dallas doubling down in the short term, like on the face of it, it looks like what Phoenix did a year ago. Now, Phoenix did it with much worse roster construction. I'll grant you that. Like what Dallas is doing, it's not nearly as idiotic in the short term because like they actually have a point guard still, which Phoenix never bothered with last year. So it's not quite the same thing. But I just go to that that first round playoff series, Phoenix and Minnesota, and what Minnesota did to Phoenix seemed like symbolism for the where the league's going. And I remember being so shocked in the moment that it happened. And of course, the Minnesota team isn't the same team post KAT trade. I get that. You know, this year they're still a tough team, but they're not what they were a year ago. But you look at it and like, the two teams with their best records to meet at late in the season, whatever they called it, whatever, it was Cleveland and Oklahoma City who are decidedly on this new movement here. So the teams like, I mean, Golden State's doing the only thing that they can. I get that. You got to milk whatever you can out of what Steph's got left. Dallas didn't have to do that. Dallas was set up for the long haul with Luka to keep going and keep it moving. But it's like, when I see Cleveland and Oklahoma City and Houston, what they did to my Cavs the both times that they played there, I'm like, I think these other teams are looking at an NBA that maybe the last vestiges of that left a year or two ago. I just, you know, the day when you could do that and just like, we're going to cobble together a super team, the young teams that have been kind of building and growing and whatever, they're there, and I don't know that you can displace them with any kind of non-organic super team. I don't know. Maybe it's just a vibe that I'm getting that's not entirely accurate. We'll see how it plays out. But it seems like a dated strategy to me, Ben.
Yeah, and I agree, too. And again, what makes the Luka-LeBron situation unique is that it's creating a super team with a guy who is probably going to be retired in around 2 or 3 years.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
You're essentially just rebuilding for the future at this point with a guy that you can see, but who's going to be another MVP candidate years on end. It's just, again, this is going to be ultimately the question because the Lakers are going to be the focal point of pretty much the NBA media for the rest of the year with mm-hmm. this current Luka LeBron team. And it's a weird positive and negative for a lot of these teams that have been going on great runs like OKC and Cleveland and Memphis and Houston,
mm-hmm.
which is you're going to get pushed back a little bit, but then you're also not being talked about as much either. So
right.
You can have a little bit of a run where you're not doing as well and not be questioned. Like very similar to when Cleveland lost a couple of games, same thing with OKC, they blew a couple of late game leads. So it's going to be, the Lakers are going to get all the attention and all mm-hmm. the media and all the clicks. But what's ultimately going to happen is that the microscope for these teams that have been dominant, like you said, are going to have space to breathe at least.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, let's be honest, let's say that trade never happens. Ultimately, mm-hmm. what's going to be the discussion coming down at the end of the year is will Oklahoma City and Cleveland get to 70 wins?
Yeah.
And that takes up a lot of, you know, player mental energy more than anything else.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so it's fascinating because it's, you know, you see the new paradigm and teams coming along faster even than we thought. And again, you know, I, from observing, you know, the Cavs very closely, I expected a lot more out of them than what we saw last year with Kenny Atkinson coming in. But again, as I make no bones about it, the pace that they've been on has surprised me. I mean, delighted me, obviously, but has surprised me. Houston, the strides that they took, mirroring what Oklahoma City did a year ago. So it's like we appear to, and look at what Minnesota did a year ago. So we're in a day and age where, again, and the common denominator is I keep getting surprised by this as teams are doing it faster. But I don't know. It seems like GMs are sort of getting caught flat-footed. And unlike me, they're getting paid big money to be able to figure out the game and to be able to think to themselves that, like, do I want to double down on a short-term near-window thing when these teams that are supposed to take longer to get great are already getting great? And like I said, you know, if you're Golden State, you have to go that way. You have to roll the dice. If you're Dallas, you don't have to. And that's what seems to be so idiotic about what they did is, you know, pissing away the long-term window.
Right. And I think the real question, too, is that you also have a GM in Nico Harrison who is now getting hit piece after hit piece written about him, about him being difficult, him being obsessed about health and wellness. So it's going to be something that is going to look back upon, whether it's going to work out or it's not going to work out. But we've already seen these deals happen. Mm-hmm. And so far, we have never seen a superstar of Luka's standard get traded, and it's worked out for the team that's traded him.
Yeah.
It's just never has. And, you know, maybe I could be wrong. You know, there's always an ACL tear away from things being different, but it looks like, at least for this stretch run, though, the Western Conference got a lot more interesting, and the Eastern Conference, it's still going to be between three or four teams to see who's going to make it to the finals.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. And then in the West in particular, I think, again, a lot is going to come down to what the draw ends up being, and that's going to be fascinating and seeing on the play-in. And something that I said at the beginning of the season is, you know, you're going to see a team missing even the play-in that you're just not going to believe it would have happened. Now, at the beginning of the year, I think we would have had Sacramento, you know, penciled in relatively firmly as one of the top 10 teams. So for Sacramento to not even make the play-in right now, well, they traded away Fox. They've had a disastrous season. But, I mean, there could be somebody joining them on the outside looking in where we wouldn't have believed that at the beginning of the year because, again, keeping in mind, there was a thought that Houston could still be a year away. San Antonio was certainly at least a year away, weren't they? So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's a zero-sum game. Every time one of the young ones comes up, there's going to be somebody that you think is an established team that could be all the way on the outside looking in.
Right, and I think in terms of the depth of the league in both conferences, we're seeing it on both ends, on the West and in the East. Like, you know, Alabama, Toronto, Charlotte, and the Wizards have just not been great this year, but they still all got really good young talent, you know, and I would not be behooved to see one of those teams make a little bit of jump up in the next season of the play-in tournament or get into the first round. And that just says how healthy the league is in terms of a talent basis when even the worst teams have one or two guys who are notable enough to be playing and have name recognition. So overall, it's just going to, I think if we look at the league at this period of time, the depth is the best it's ever been, that we're probably going to see even more depth when expansion occurs.
Yeah. Oh, we absolutely are. By the way, speaking of Toronto, this is hilarious. Going back to trading deadline day, the number of different outlets that were doing YouTube live streams analyzing what was happening at the point in time, I can't remember for the life of me which one this was, but there was one of them, and somebody was just spamming in the instant comments here, "Welcome to Toronto, Devin Booker. Welcome to Toronto, Devin Booker." And I'm looking at this like, what did I miss? This couldn't have happened, right? And indeed it hadn't. But somebody was being a very, very clever scammer on that occasion, Ben.
I mean, sometimes that happens. I mean, Brandon Ingram is in a whole other, you know, there could be a whole podcast dedicated to the Brandon Ingram situation.
Yeah.
Time, so.
Yeah, and whatever happens there. But as far as what we're looking at for the stretch run here, again, like we said, probably not too different from, you know, the major players in the East and the West coming in. It's whoever tries to sort of infiltrate that group there and try to, you know, wedge their way into this thing like Dallas did a year ago, coming from the middle of the pack. Any additional thoughts that you have for either conference here post-NBA trade deadline and pre-heading down the stretch?
I feel like, obviously, it's going to be very interesting to see how the Lakers' center rotation will be. Alex Len was signed by them late.
Yeah.
Is Jackson Hayes and Alex Len enough? We will see. I mean, the question also, admittedly, too, in the Eastern Conference is the Knicks have been up and down for over the last 10 to 15 games. Are they going to hit their stride and start to pick it up? Because right now, I don't think anyone would have thought that the Knicks would be the third team in the Eastern Conference competing. And then again, too, Boston has been also very up and down this entire season, where they went on a stretch where they were like, where they lost to some of the worst teams in the league. And then they go back and they destroy some of the better teams in the league. So it's really hard to get a full read on how good they're going to be into the stretch run.
That's right.
And then the West is going to just be, it's going to come down to how Luka and LeBron play together. And it's going to come down to, will OKC be able to get over the hump? Because, again, and this is a point that has been made previously, they still have not gone past the second round of the playoffs. even right. though they are the favorites in the Western Conference, and in my opinion, pretty wide favorites.
Yeah,
they still have to win and get to a conference finals before we can treat them seriously as a contender.
Agreed. Yes, they have to prove that after losing to the aforementioned Dallas Mavericks a year ago in the Western Conference semifinals, which again was surprising to me at the time that it happened. But again, power matchup
to Cleveland too on the same back end too, Rick. Like,
yeah,
they still also have to get past and get past the second round.
Seriously
as a contender long term.
This season is a flaming disaster on every level if they don't make it past the second round. I mean, I'm pretty confident that will be the case, but it will be a disaster if that doesn't happen. And in the case of the Knicks, all I can say as a Cavs fan is, Tibbs, don't you listen to the critics. Keep playing your five starters 40 minutes a night and more. That's the only way you can get them ready for the postseason. So keep doing what you're doing, Tibbs. That's all I can say. So, as we head down the stretch here, again, I look forward to playoff time to breaking it down with you and taking a look and seeing specifically where it's going. But always a pleasure, Ben Chu, my great friend, our FDH Hoops analyst. Thank you so much for being here today to get into this stuff with me.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick.
Appreciate having you around, Ben. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1812.